You're listening to Innovation for Alpha, where we explore everything at the intersection of healthcare innovation and finance. Through our discussions and interviews, we keep you informed and educated about healthcare innovations, next-level venture investing, and everything involving the combination of the two.
Hi, everybody. This is Tobin Arthur, and I am recording today with Dr. Jeremy Krell, who is a very interesting dentist with an incredible business background. And so I'm really looking forward, Dr. Krell, to jumping in and just kind of learning more about, you know, how you got into dentistry and business and the combination of both. This will be fun.
Yeah, thank you, Tobin, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. A little bit about my background. It's definitely sort of a non-traditional dentist. I've been called many a time. I sort of chuckle, you know, because most people, you know, say that's because I have a management background. I have an MBA from Chicago Booth. And, you know, I find that interesting because, you know, when we show up into our dental practices on day one, the job is, you know, at least 50% business, right? You know, we have to manage accounts payable and accounts receivable, marketing, finance, you know, the entire gambit. It's not just about clinical care. But outside of my, you know, sort of clinical practice life, where I do have a couple of practices in New Jersey and almost another one, I largely do not practice much clinically anymore, about a day a month, I'd say tops. For the last roughly 17 years, my bread and butter has really been in the startup world. If you take it back to the beginning, it was an idea that started with a good friend of mine who was a web and graphic designer. We started a company, it turned into three, we sold two of them off. Just was a good ride. And then we moved on to, I moved on to, I guess you could call it luxury good and commodity service for college students, doing sort of laundry, pickup and delivery, room cleaning, appliance rental. I was the chief director of sales, and we ended up, the company ended up selling about 4 years later, right before the market crash in 2008. And then I really loved this is all before my dental life, really, right? And I loved the excitement. So I wanted to form an incubator. There were not millions of them like there are today. So I formed one and started it in New York, scaled it to Boston, Chicago, San Francisco. I sit on the board now. It still runs today. I wanted to take kind of a dive deeper into the healthcare entrepreneurship space at large. It's pretty big. And so I chose insurance as a place to start because it's such a tough nut, you know, to sort of crack. And so I took a role heading up strategic provider innovation and development at Oscar Health Insurance. And we actually IPO'd about 3 months ago now. You know, after my time at Oscar, you know, I looked to take a step into dental entrepreneurship, combining now my management background and clinical background. And I saw Quip. It was pretty early days, subscription electric, you know, really toothbrush at that time, and came on to sort of head up the so-called professional services or dental division of the company, doing, you know, everything from provider marketing, sales, business development, clinical studies, a variety of plugins to the consumer team. And was with Quip for about 4 years as kind of a dentist behind, and it's been a tremendous growth curve. Learned a lot from Quip, and I still maintain a role there, but decided to kind of ultimately build out my own management consulting firm for oral health startups, realizing that they needed kind of specialized servicing, specialized care. And so I formed the Barchester Bay Group. It's at barchesterbay.com, about 34 ventures under management there, inclusive of a wide variety of different roles, from the most involved being sort of a CMO, to around the least involved being, you know, a bit more of a passive investor or advisor, and everything in between. But so many of them were asking me, how do we fundraise in this space? It's so difficult to fundraise in dentistry, right? We have these corporates that, you know, effectively will invest in their own acquisition opportunities. We have, you know, strategic investors who will come in small bits and pieces, very piecemeal. You know, we have VCs, but they're outside of the space and largely don't understand the market opportunity. And so I went and started Revere Partners, VC, and it's the first venture capital fund in oral health, focused exclusively on oral health and early stage companies within it. And also started joining a number of other great groups, around fundraising in healthcare, tech, but that would also look at oral health, and formed a lot of great partnerships, and very excited to of course be working with the Angel MD team in that capacity, as well as it's very clear one fund can clearly not fund the entire world of oral health, and it's really important to partner and bring in other experts there. So that's a little bit of background on me.
That's amazing stuff. Let me go back just a little bit. So you had all kinds of business experience early on, and then, what was it about dentistry that kind of pulled you in to say, I'm going to, get back, or I'm going to go pursue this in the midst of all of this business activity? Was it just always a lifelong dream, or what was the draw?
Yeah, no, I think I get that question a fair bit, and I think about it a lot. I come from a very medical family. My parents, and my brothers and my cousins and my aunts and uncles, a lot of physicians in that group. And when I was growing up in my childhood, it was kind of it's referred to now as the heyday of medicine, right? The golden age of medicine. All kinds of things going on, right? Pharmaceutical companies unrestricted in how they would incentivize doctors, right? Doctors able to, charge reimbursement rates and prices that are, simply unseen today, right? Mm-hmm. So really medicine was very different. Yet, even then, medicine really lagged behind, a lot of the rest of the tech world, right? It's only until recently, for example, you see, and even now physicians still fighting it, moving over from, paper charts to electronic health record systems, right? Moving over from wet x-ray systems to digital, still is an effort to convert everybody over. And so I thought, how interesting, healthcare as a whole, does so well on the personal side, but yet, the technology side, things lack so far behind. And then I looked at dentistry, right? I was a non-compliant kid. I had multiple rounds of braces. I got exposure to everybody from the general dentist and pediatric dentist to the orthodontist. And I said, man, they're also doing really well, right? But they, shockingly, if it's even possible, lag even further behind the rest of the medical world, right? So kind of from the kid who did his homework in the physician's, study room in the office, got to take a look at the behind the scenes from an early age. I just saw that lag, right? And to me, as I became more entrepreneurial and started to kind of scratch that itch, I started to see, lagging behind the times really is kind of fertile territory for innovation, right? That's an area where we can really, innovate and create change. And it's, as I've really explored through it, it's not quite that easy. It's not unrestricted, right? It's kind of like an unblazed, path through a jungle. So you still have to, cut things out of your way to make a coherent, pathway through. But, definitely a lot of opportunity and a lot of demand and interest that I found in healthcare overall, and then dentistry, even further, kind of behind that. So I've kind of set my mission to innovate within the dental sector.
That makes sense. Let's talk just a little bit about, so one of the things, and this is a bit of a layperson's perspective, so I'm interested in your insider perspective. One of the things about the dental space versus other specialties is there seems to be more concentration. You've got some big organizations like the Shines and so forth, but there's not, hundreds of them. There's a handful of them. And one of the things that we observe with startups that's really critical is distribution. How do you, if you've got a great product, how is it that you get distribution? And then ultimately, what's the end game? So again, in other specialties, cardiovascular, for example, there's going to be lots of ultimate acquirers of that company. It could be J&J, it could be Medtronic, and on and on and on. So when you think about dental startups and distribution, and then kind of the end game of this, what's the difference that you've learned over the years? What are the keys, if there are any, things as you're advising these startups about how to build distribution, A, and then B, what is ultimately, the end game for these companies?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so I think Yeah, you're right. First of all, there's a lot of concentration. You know, in other words, I guess the way I break that down is there are lots and lots of really big corporates that are, you know, manufacturers, distributors, DSOs. There's tons of, you know, consolidation that's happening at the top there. If you watch it closely, all kinds of acquisitions and mergers going on. And then there's this huge gap in the middle, right? I almost kind of call that no man's land, right? And then there's tons and tons and tons of little guys and gals, right, that are you know, kind of going around trying to make something happen. So there is this giant, you know, sort of gap between the top and the bottom of the food chain in terms of company size and stage of development. And so a big thing that the Barchester Bay Group and Revere Partners is focused on is that bridge, right? It's not enough to just give money, right? You have to be kind of active and strategic. You've got to build a team. You've got to build partnerships that can facilitate that bridge over the two. Then the second thing, Tobin, you mentioned, which I think is really interesting, is distribution. I got to say, I hear this commonly from startups that pitch to us. And it's, you know, we always ask that question, the pitch, well, what's your sales and marketing strategy? What's your go-to-market strategy? I'm often hearing, oh, well, we've spoken to Shine. We've spoken to Patterson, Benko, Darby, you know, some of the big distributors. And I said, well, that's fantastic. But you know what? That's not going to really help you. Right. Because, and I'm, again, I maintain a lot of friendships and want to be careful here at each of those companies and their C-suites. But, you know, you can really view a distributor. I think they'd frankly agree with me in saying this. You can view a distributor really as an IKEA sized grocery store, right? Where there are many, 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 many rows. And, you know, if a startup is frankly lucky, it's going to get on one of those rows, but it's going to be the bottom, like foot level shelf space on the 84th row, right? In other words, no dentist is finding you. It's like the app world. It's akin to kind of the app world, right? In the tech where many, many, many apps go to die, right? They're just never found. A distributor is not going to sell your product, right? 800, 1200 force people. They've got other things to focus on, right? That they know sell, that have big margins, right? And you are going to give up a big margin by working with a distributor. So distributor is merely a shelf, right? It's somewhere for people to find things, but they have to know what they're looking for, right? Think about, I know COVID, many of us didn't go to the grocery store, but mm-hmm. You can turn your mind back to when you did, you go in there with kind of a targeted list, right? And it's not just, you know, find ketchup, right? It's find Heinz ketchup or Annie's. Right. You know what you're looking for, right? You know the brand that you're looking to find. And that's exactly what the distributor, how practices kind of treat the distributor. So what that means is you need to have a sales and marketing infrastructure, or you need to have a plan to create one that generates education and awareness and trust among dental professionals, because that's how you sell your product, right? It is not because a distributor carries you. That's right. Great. And so I think that's a big one, you know, that we work on a lot with our ventures in the Barchester Bay Group and Revere Partners, because you know you really have to get providers to understand. And providers, on the other hand, right, they have these rigid workflows. It's very difficult to disrupt. Yep. And they face tons of products. In dentistry, the problem is never that there is a shortage of product selection. There's usually 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 tight set competitors over any given product. You know, but the real kind of tricky part is what's going to implement. What do I know about and trust? And then second of all, what can I implement easily? Right? Mm-hmm. Where everybody, depending on what the product is, everybody in the office can get around it. Right, because nobody does anything by themselves in the office.
Right,
so you know, whether it's the folks at the front, you know, whether it's the clinicians, whether it's the folks behind the scenes, right? Everybody's got to, you know, going to have to get it and get behind it in order for it to really work. And that's only really possible if it's easy to implement and if you know about it. And so I think that's kind of how I would respond to the distribution question.
That's great, great insights. One sort of adjunct to that: how ubiquitous is social media amongst dentistry today? I mean, is a startup, is that a critical channel? Are dentists paying attention? And if so, what are the primary channels where they're active?
Yeah, I spent a good time as CMO for a couple of different companies in both the product space and the software space. And it's interesting, right? Because the first thing I look at, you know, social media is a means to connect with people, right? But it's who you're trying to connect with. The dental office is this weird sort of shared responsibility. right? Where on the one hand, the dentist is the practice owner, right? They're the business owner. They have to ultimately say yes to any kind of spend. They're your ultimate decision maker. But on the other hand, the people actually doing the shopping, doing the purchasing, doing the implementing is largely not the dentist, right? So you have this, there's this spectrum of decision-making power and implementation power there, or influence, I guess you could say, that make it a little tricky for a company to, you know, kind of market itself to those types of buyers. I think I want to believe, you know, that I'm going to just dispel this myth first, you know, but I want to believe that LinkedIn is the best place to find, and market to dental professionals. Many of them do, the dentists themselves, you know, kind of put themselves on there, but, you know, largely, you know, while there's some success to be found in marketing, there have not found it to be a huge marketing engine personally, or at least not yet. I think it can develop that way. I look at Facebook and kind of the demographics are shifting, you know, right, where it started the very young, you know, and ultimately millennial kind of population and has since sort of graduated, to some of the generations that are a little older than the millennials now. I think you can find those folks there, and that's good because, you know, people need to hear it more than once in order to understand what it is. I think largely Instagram has become, you know, even more popular, I'd argue, than Facebook, especially among the hygiene population. So if you're looking to target hygienists who have an awful lot of influence in the practice, they're often the ones spending the most time with the patient. They're focused on all the preventive work that the patients really need to hear first and foremost. They're using a lot of products, and depending on the states, you know, more products than others. So I think you find really the hygiene community within Instagram. And then there's all kinds of new platforms popping up, likes of TikTok and others that have become really popular. I think it's key to have video content that's really short. I recommend video over static content. I mean, some mix of static content is good, but video content is really what's attracting people. Making it short and sweet. I think the other thing that's becoming interesting are there now some file formats that I've seen that are more interactive files. So, you know, you don't just see a short video, which maybe you're getting overloaded on these days, but also, you know, you can go and interact with the file and see how the particular product or service works. I think that's really great.
Interesting.
I think one thing that also kind of stands out as I think about social media is, and where some of my companies have succeeded in the past, is in dentistry, we really need to start thinking about brand, right? It is not, I think, of the typical trade show, right? Where a lot of business is done in dentistry. And you've got these booths that are 10 by 10. They've got, you know, a backdrop with tons of words on them. They've got, you know, tables on all three other sides of the booth that have a thousand little knickknacks laid out.
Right.
And you walk by it and you're like, that's a whole store. Right. And I don't know even what the company name is or what they do. And so I think we need to really think about, and I would love to see dentistry think more about, you know, creating a high brand aesthetic, thinking about things in a design forward type of way, right? All the way down to the industrial design of their products and all the way up, you know, to the you know, brand and marketing, you know, brand value that they're trying to create. I think one of the things that the really big companies concentrated up at the top are having trouble with is a connection to the consumer, right? Because they make one-off transactions. They sell a product and it's done, right? But on the other hand, you see them acquiring all these consumer-oriented platforms and businesses because they've created a brand that connect with consumers, right? So I think we need to start thinking about brand.
That's great feedback and good insight. You know, let me go back just for a second. You referenced a few minutes ago DSOs. Talk just a little bit about that shift in the industry as DSOs have grown larger and more dentists have become employed dentists versus private practice. How does that impact, you know, what's your kind of general perspective on that? And then maybe more specifically, how does that impact startups that are breaking into the space where on the one hand they're dealing with, you know, effectively a sole proprietor or a small business, or on the other hand, they're dealing with now large corporations?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's really interesting. It makes sense from the clinician's perspective, right? They come out of school with an enormous amount of student debt. Some of the programs, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year for 4 years. I mean, you really saddle students with a lot of debt. And also 4 years of very crammed programs. So they get all kinds of experience when, these DSOs hire and mentor and educate, if they do it well, young clinicians. So it's become, a very popularized model in that regard. It's kind of following the same trend of group practice organizations in medicine. Yep. I think people have differing perspectives, first of all, in terms of the numbers. Pre-pandemic, I see numbers like 10, 11, 12%. Consolidated, maybe upwards of 15%. Now, post-pandemic, I'm seeing, anywhere from 15 to 25% consolidated. Mm-hmm. So number of deals, even in transactions right now, that are happening. So, regardless of what the actual number is, suffice it to say, somewhere around a quarter of our industry is consolidated, if not now, shortly. Mm-hmm. For startups, what that represents is actually something sort of important. Right. A lot of startups out the gate, will try to sell directly and first to the DSOs. They're doing that because A, they get a lot of feedback from multiple different practices, kind of all in one. It's a honey hole, if you will. Hmm. Right. Number two, is you can roll it out and really get some revenue, significant revenue from one deal. Hmm. Now, what they kind of under recognize is this is an enterprise sale. Right. They're somewhat complex and there's a longer sales cycle there. And I think that's heavily underestimated. I think the other thing that's underestimated is, who's in charge. Mm-hmm. Right. I think there are three major stakeholders in any DSO sale that I've been a part of and that's been successful. Right. You've got kind of the business end, the CEO, him or herself. Second to that, you have, really the technical staff, if what you're trying to implement is it all technical. Mm-hmm. And then thirdly, and in no particular order here, are the clinical staff. At the end of the day, a DSO is a clinical business, right? These are practices, these are professional providers trying to, provide quality care for their patients and they're focused on patient outcomes. So, again, in my experience, you need to have the clinician leadership buy-in. And then, you sort of also need to have one of the other two, right? You either need to have the technical staff, you need to have the, and/or the leadership in order to really kind of champion your idea, to the finish line. I'm seeing a lot of pilots being successful, starting in a handful of offices, implementing it, doing a good job implementing it, setting clear KPIs, proving out those KPIs, and then rolling out to other practices. I'm seeing a lot of success in either creating something exclusive for the DSO or giving them it first or giving it to them as the best price, mm-hmm. or just creating something that's a little bit different for them compared to everybody else. But ultimately the DSO represents something important for the startup because it's often the first place that they go. On the other hand, you look from the DSO's perspective, they want to differentiate themselves. There's now a lot of them and some of them are in tight competition in certain states and cities. And so they're looking to be innovative and they also are looking to be extremely efficient if they're in scale mode. In order to do that, they often need the likes of dental products and services that are innovative and new and cutting edge. But they don't have, great resources set up to really interact with the startups, right? It's sort of a whole different partnership area. They get sort of tucked in under business development or technology or clinical, but rarely has kind of a dedicated, resource to handle, those sorts of things. And so that's again, where kind of the Barchester Bay Group and Revere Partners have stepped in to be that bridge, to be that connector piece between the startups and the DSOs. But I think there's a very important relationship there. It is much harder to go sell, sort of ones and twos, individual practices. It takes a lot of effort. It's expensive marketing. And then you get one sale, right? Every sale counts for a startup, but you get one office on, say a monthly SaaS fee or a one-off, purchase of your product that you then have to work really hard to get, repurchased. A lot of startups going to the DSOs first.
That's great insight. Let's segue to the funds a little bit. You've referenced them a couple times. Tell us a little bit more about them. What are your goals for those? And And then maybe let's tie into that a little bit about what are you excited about? Well, you know, you're looking at trends. What are the kinds of things that you're seeing and really digging into these days?
Yeah, I know. I agree. This is an exciting kind of area of dentistry. So many new areas kind of popping up. I think the investment landscape is one of them that is on the horizon. So, in terms of Barchester Bay Group, you know, it's really kind of management consulting. It's a wide variety of different, you know, more strategic services, you know, more along the lines of consulting, you know, or advisory for, you know, for executive leadership for a startup within dentistry. And there are a few outside of dentistry. But Revere Partners, which I'll spend kind of most of the time focused on here, you know, being the first VC fund, I think, you know, kind of the overview is that there's tons of innovation that happens within dentistry, right? No matter how you cut it, whether it's new companies formed under the right NCAIS codes, whether it's 510K submissions to the FDA, or whether it's, you know, PitchBook or Crunchbase tracked fundraising rounds that are open, there's constant innovation going on here, but it's a space that suffers from, you know, and is hindered by less than ideal capital flow. So Revere Partners sort of has a three-pronged investment thesis, if you will. I think the first is capital access, right? It wants to provide, you know, VC funding to startups with an oral health application specifically, and to be thought of as sort of an active investor, strategic investor, a thought leader. It's not really a service provider, though. It leaves that to Barchester Bay Group and other, you know, other incubators, accelerators. I think the second piece of it is, you know, really providing that industry access, both maybe even pre-investment, but largely also post-investment. I spend a lot of time when I lecture talking about the big eight, right? Big manufacturers, distributors, DSOs, insurers, big academic institutions, professional associations, the big labs, and the big retailers. Often I find, you know, the startups want to connect with one or multiple of those big eight and their leadership. In order to do that, they need to be ready and they need to have the right people helping them. And so that's been largely an area of focus for us. And then I think the third is, you know, also what you mentioned, Tobin, industry insights. We spent about 18 to 20 months prior to the formation of this fund in sort of stealth mode, building, you know, one of a kind database and published research on early stage oral health transactions, right? Tracking over 500-600 companies, about 1,000-1,200 transactions in terms of how they change over time. Right, how the value changes over time by subtype of dental startup, from, you know, SaaS companies to consumer products to biotech to access to care or payments and reimbursement, you name it. And so that helps us both benchmark but also track the trends, right, that we're seeing. When we look at our data, so you asked about trends specifically, when we look at our data, I think five big buckets are really kind of popping out to us. The first is really kind of tech and SaaS based companies. So I think right away of, and not limited to this, but I think right away of artificial intelligence, right? The way that radiographic diagnostic assistance has sort of popped out, right? The second bucket is sort of biotech, right? I think right away this area that I'm starting to call biome, right? What flora, bacterial flora, are in the mouth? How is that affecting you? What can you do about it? What are the treatment modalities, right? Also fit into this category are a variety of implant innovations and bone grafting innovations and others. I think the third is really consumer products, right? Upmarket premium products, in a box products, right? We've seen what's happened with Quip and this world of subscription oral health preventative products. We've seen what's happened with the clear aligner market, right? The likes of Candid and others innovating in the space there. The fourth is kind of payments and reimbursement, right? Which is a bucket that kind of falls out from the fact that insurance is tricky in dentistry, right? From an experiential standpoint, consumers from surveys largely do not know who their carrier is, what their benefits are, how to access them. From the practical standpoint, right? Often in a single procedure, if not your entire treatment plan, way outweigh the value of your entire insured plan, right? So there's lots of different, you know, sort of payment processing solutions, 0%, merchant fees, payment plans, soft credit checks, you know, text and email invoicing. So all these services that have kind of innovated within the payments and reimbursement space that I think are coming out. I think one key area there within that, all of that, is financing, right? There's, you know, very few players doing it right now. They do not accept, you know, even close to everybody. You know, they reject a lot of people and they charge huge numbers on both the provider side, the merchant side, as well as on the patient or the customer side. And so that's an area that's really going to get turned over, I think.
Interesting.
And the last area, the fifth area, is maybe this kind of access to care and prevention, right? How do we prevent things from getting bigger? Mm-hmm. How do we get people, you know, into care sooner, right? I think, you just think about the automobile industry or other industry, you can fully build your car with all the specs, right? You can test drive your car without putting down any commitment besides your license, you know, for them to hold it while you drive it, right? There is nothing like that in dentistry. Mm-hmm. You've got to find a provider. You've got to make sure they take your insurance, do the service you want, are available at the time you want, wait for that appointment, wait in the waiting room, right? And then they walk you through an entire exam, cleaning, x-rays. Then finally, you get to talk about what you want to talk about in your mouth, right? If you put, and it's hard for me as well as a provider, but if you really spend the time and the effort to try to, you know, trade places and put yourself from the perspective of the consumer, then from a psychological distance perspective, the two are really far apart, right? And it shouldn't be. People should be able to access care a bit more easily, find out what's going on. You know, start build up momentum and motivation to go do something about it. And so those are kind of the trend areas.
Yeah, those are great. Talk just a little bit about the fund in terms of where you typically come in, at what stage in a company, or are you ambivalent about the stage?
Yeah, no. So we looked at our data as well for that question and guidance on that question. Understand kind of where are LPs investing? What is that risk reward profile that they're trying to hit? What we came out with is roughly a 2-to-1 Series A to seed ratio. So we spent about 70%, you know, I think of our fund between those two companies, about a 2-to-1 ratio of Series A to seed. We save a little bit for pre-seed stage investments and a little bit for post Series A follow-on investments as well. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to double down on the winners, obviously. Yep. But the majority of our focus is between seed and Series A. You know, what really differentiates ourselves, you know, from the others besides our research, I'd say is number one, or is one of the factors. A second factor is our team. We spent a tremendous amount of time building a world-class team. Right? We have about 5 in our admin team, about 7 venture partners, and we have about 45 associates on our team, all of whom are big names, you know, reputable people, leaders within dentistry. And that enables us to really source ventures in a way that others, you know, would have trouble doing. It enables us to diligence ventures very deeply. And then it allows us to really help the ones that we invest in. So team is important to us as a strategic investor. And I think, you know, the third thing is our structure. So we partnered with AngelList to create an AngelList rolling fund. It's a really unique structure. We're essentially a subscription service for investing. Mm-hmm. So what that means is investors can invest on a quarterly basis, and then we can deploy capital on a quarterly basis.
Yep.
And so that's better really for everybody, for the investor. They stay more liquid over time instead of having one large capital call. They're more diversified because we invest in 2, 3, 4, 5 companies a quarter versus a VC fund in one.
Yep.
I, as the general partner, can, you know, better manage supply and demand each quarter, so we don't have to, you know, oversubscribe or undersubscribe, and we face perverse incentives of having to invest by a certain amount of time, some time mandate. And then maybe best of all is it remains open, right? VC funds typically close after they raise the fund. Nobody can get in until the next fund. We've remained open so that LPs can continue to be accessible. Hmm. And our LP base is really, you know, of the individual types of investors, let's call them. We really have, you know, on the one hand, accredited angel investors. That includes an awful lot of dentists, doctors, lawyers, professional types.
Yep.
The second area is sort of, I call them high net worth individuals. The third area would be kind of family offices. And then we have multiple kind of entity types of investors as well. But they can really, you know, access this in a very streamlined, you know, easy way, where we're very cost friendly to the investor as well. And then they can even syndicate on top of, we invite anybody to syndicate on top of any of the deals where we have extra allocation so that if investors see a particularly interesting one that comes through our rolling fund and want to invest more, they can do so on top and we do it all for them. So they really, really get, sort of a silver platter, of new cutting edge opportunities served to them and well vetted.
I love that. It's a cool structure. Startup Health is doing something similar now where they just launched an impact fund and are doing a rolling quarterly close. And I think that's a smart, it's certainly a great way to make it accessible for individuals. And like you said, create a diversified portfolio. By the way, just as I was thinking, you mentioned Oscar. Did you ever interact with Kevin Assemi when Kevin was there?
No, I didn't. I think it was probably a little bit after my time. I came in there around 2016, I think, or so. But very much, there are two other leaders, largely, the work of Mario Schlosser, and definitely a lot of work from Josh Kushner as well.
Yeah, that's cool. Kevin used to work with one of my former colleagues at AngelMD at Microsoft. So, yeah. And he's from Seattle. So we knew Kevin from.
Well, everybody does take a page out of Oscar's book. Quite frankly, that is a really smart, very, very smart team.
Yeah.
When you're talking about people from, some of the biggest investment and financial institutions in the nation. I know a lot of them go there to sort of run out hedge fund, non-competes and restricted covenants, but it brings in really smart folks also from some of the top business schools and from some of the top other companies. Very, very data oriented. They really have data drive decisions there. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of just the thing that the health insurance market needed, right? Is to have somebody take a fresh perspective, a fresh look on what's not working here and how to simplify it and make it, really better for the consumer. And I think they've done a great job at that in a very complicated space.
Well, it's a great way to put it. And I loved how you framed it also for startups, just really thinking about putting themselves in the hands of the patients. And there's so many areas that are yet to be disrupted that are just archaic in terms of how they're organized. And just couple final seconds on the show. Let's talk just a little bit about, kind of the status quo or the here and now in terms of what you're focused on. Maybe just mention, in addition to the funds, you've got a couple of companies I think that are top on your priority list. Maybe just walk through your kind of day to day, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm super excited about Simplify. So Simplify, for those that don't know, it is really a company that helps to automate or digitize that front desk and all the processes that are going on in the front, really the front office of any business, right? It predominantly started in dentistry, but is also very accessible to healthcare at large and even quite a few businesses out of healthcare. So what they provide is high level, what I bucket is really access to care, right? And the way that they do that is an affordability of care too. But they do it through 24/7 live chat, right? So this is not the bots that you see everybody else have, right? They actually have hundreds of chatters that are trained in this industry. They answer within 7 seconds or less on your website, a completely customized script to your website and to your brand. They speak 24, I think, or 8 different languages, 24 total dialects. If you think about, right, I mean, a single working parent at 11 p.m. On Easter Eve, right, can schedule an appointment for their kid. I mean, it's really 24/7, 365, and very, very accessible. They have direct scheduling services as well, and in addition to that, have brought on an entire new payments processing suite, as well as a patient recall service. So it really helps as you think about, marketing to a dental practice or to a business, you're driving tons of people to your website. How are you converting them? Right. It's as if, right, people don't think about it the same way as if you have, a line of people out your front desk in your waiting room, or out onto the sidewalk. Of course, you can do everything you possibly could to accommodate each person. Why are you not doing that for the people that queue up? on your website. Frankly, you probably spent more money to get those people to your website than you did the people to the front door. Right. And so Simplify really kind of steps in and helps in terms of affordability and access to care. And then on the product side, I'm really excited about Verena Solutions, based in Chicago. And what Verena provides is really a safety and efficiency platform for practices, which is very top of mind given the global pandemic. They started with a flagship product, which is called SafeCap. It's a safe capping needle system. Makes it easy to do the right thing. There's a lot of accidental needle sticks out there. Then all of their Sharps products come with a proprietary coating that this may sound scary to some people, but I can promise you it's to their benefit. It makes things much sharper and much more durable, right? Which actually for the patient means it's much more comfortable, right? Because otherwise you're sort of puncturing the skin to make a, to make an incision or to make a hole, versus here, you're just kind of sliding through, right, with less tissue damage. And so it's really important. They also sell, a huge amount of other safety products from PPE to waterline, looking air quality now, but making it in a way where it's subscription service available. So it basically covers all of the safety needs in your practice, free shipping, at replacements, no question, right? But is really what they're really selling is safety, right? As a whole. And so I find that concept, really, really intriguing as offices think about OSHA compliance, not just as a, sort of a thorn in your shoe, right? It's not just something you have to do and check off a checkbox list. This is something that really, is meant to keep your practice and your patients safe. And if there's anything that should be reminding us of that, I think we can go ahead and look at the past 24 or 48 months and think about our all of our actions and how we can change
right. And be different. By the way, on both of those companies' front, I'll just sort of put it out there. What's their primary need? So maybe in reverse order, what's the next big thing for each of them? And to the extent that there's anybody listening to this program that could plug into one of those needs, what would those be?
Yeah, I think Verena is in an exciting scale mode. They're looking to drive their new subscription service and their new proprietarily coded products out into the marketplace. And I think, anybody who's interested in testing that concept of safety as a platform, if you will, I think that's a great place to go. It's verenasolutions.com. And I think that's that. And they're also fundraising now. Simplify is about to close around. They're looking, really heavily at expansion within the dental industry, beyond the dental industry, into healthcare. They're very big in optometry, orthopedics, plastics, some other areas, as well as fitness, physical therapy, a variety of businesses outside. So if you're looking for a tool kind of, on your business's website, it's a real person talking how you would talk to your customer. That's them. So I think they're looking to do that and looking at also at a lot of enterprise deals as well. So I think both of them are in, definitely high scale up and growth mode. One's about to close a Series A. One is Verena Solutions has open fundraising. So it's, I think, a really exciting time for both.
That's cool. Well, for now, let's end the show there. This is incredible stuff. I mean, you've got so much going on. We could have a whole discussion about each one of those endeavors. So we'll do more of that over time. And I appreciate your time. It was really great to hear about the different things you're involved in and kind of how you think about some of these things. Look forward to more conversations to come.
Yeah, thank you, Tobin. Really appreciate the opportunity to be here and how important it is to have a partner in AngelMD with all the things I'm doing. We need that kind of support and partnership and camaraderie. So I'm excited for what the future holds and welcome anybody to reach out to me as well. Should they have any questions, you can always reach me at jeremy@reverepartnersvc.com.
Fantastic. And we'll put your contact info in the show notes to make that easy. Thanks so much. Perfect.
See you again soon for the next episode of Innovation for Alpha. Make sure to go to Innovation for Alpha for access to prior episode links, show notes, and other valuable resources. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any investment decisions, please consult with a professional. This show is copyrighted by Angel Indie Media, and written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.